and welcome to Joshua Judges Ruth. Thank you. Thank you. Joshua Judges Ruth is the podcast about the Old Testament books of Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. I'm Ken Lanning. Thank you for joining me for episode 1.15, Spare No Survivor. We got up through Joshua chapter 11 last time. So far, the Israelites have defeated Jericho, Ai, and possibly Bethel, the five-king alliance in the south made up of Jerusalem, Hebron, Jarmuth, Japhia, and Eglon, along with a number of other kings and cities listed up through chapter 10. In chapter 11, Joshua heads up north to fight Jabin, the king of Hazor, and the combined forces that he was able to muster, which must have been a lot because they were as numerous as the sands on the seashore, according to Joshua. Joshua 11:3 mentions six groups that helped make up the army: Canaanites, Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Jebusites, and Hivites. The list is similar to the one given in Joshua 3:10, where Joshua tells the people they will dispossess the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, and the Jebusites. If you were following along, you probably noticed the list in chapter 11 leaves out the Girgashites. In fact, there's no specific mention of the Girgashites being engaged in a battle with Israel. In other words, we don't read that Joshua defeated the Girgashites, except in Joshua 24:11, where Joshua is reviewing the Israelites' exploits in Canaan, and they're mentioned, along with the other six groups, as having been delivered into Israel's hand. Along the way, the Israelites made a peace treaty with the people of Gibeon and three other cities that were joined with them. Some have surmised that the Girgashites made a peace treaty with Israel as well. It's just not mentioned in Scripture. That is why there is no specific mention of their defeat. At any rate, the Gibeonites are described as Hivites, so if the Girgashites did make a treaty, it was separate from the Gibeonites' treaty. And remember, in Exodus 34 and Deuteronomy 7, the Israelites were commanded to not make a peace treaty with any other nation in the Promised Land. I want to go back to chapter 10 and look at a number of the verses that delineate Joshua's victories over the various kings. I'm using the New American Standard Bible, and I'm going to read out these verses, so get ready. 10:28. Now Joshua captured Makkedah on that day, and struck it and its king with the edge of the sword. He utterly destroyed it and every person who was in it. He left no survivor. Thus he did to the king of Makkedah, just as he had done to the king of Jericho. 10:30, speaking of Libna. The Lord gave it also, with its king, into the hands of Israel, and he struck it and every person who was in it with the edge of the sword. He left no survivor in it. Thus he did to its king, just as he had done to the king of Jericho. 10:32, speaking of Lachish. The Lord gave Lachish into the hands of Israel, and he captured it on the second day, and struck it, and every person who was in it with the edge of the sword, according to all that he had done to Libna. 10:35, speaking of Eglon. They captured it on that day, and struck it with the edge of the sword, and he utterly destroyed that day every person who was in it, according to all that he had done to Lachish. 10:37, speaking of Hebron. They captured it, and struck it, and its king, and all its cities, and all the persons who were in it, with the edge of the sword. He left no survivor, according to all that he had done to Eglon. And he utterly destroyed it, and every person who was in it. One more. 10:39, speaking of Debir. He captured it, and its king, and all its cities, and they struck them with the edge of the sword, and utterly destroyed every person who was in it. He left no survivor, just as he had done to Hebron, so he did to Debir, and its king, as he had also done to Libna and its king. The purpose of that exercise was to point out some of the repetitive phrases and what seems to be formulaic language. He utterly destroyed, struck with the edge of the sword, left no survivors. Those are phrases we see repeated throughout the chapters that describe battles in Joshua. The question that is being asked a little more today is, are these literal descriptions of the battles, or is this just how victories were described in ancient Near Eastern text? Let me talk about some non-biblical examples. Ramses II fought with Muwatalli II in what is called the Battle of Kadesh in around 1274 BC. Ramses, of course, commanded the Egyptian army and Muwatalli the Hittites. At any rate, long story short, Ramses' scouts captured some Hittite spies. After some enhanced interrogation, the spies gave up the position of the Hittite army, but added, "They are more numerous than the grains of sand on the beach." Keep in mind, that's what Ramses said they said. And we've seen that before, haven't we? In Joshua 11, Jabin's army is as numerous as the sands on the seashore. Note that the Battle of Kadesh was not decisive for either side. Yet Ramses goes on to say, "He took no note of the millions of foreigners. He regarded them as chaff. His majesty slew the entire force of the wretched foe from Hatti, together with his great chiefs and all his brothers, as well as all the chiefs of all the countries that had come with him, their infantry and their chariotry falling on their faces one upon the other. His majesty slaughtered and slew them in their places, and his majesty was alone, none other with him." Thutmose III ruled Egypt from about 1479 to 425 BC. On the Gebal Barkal stone, he describes a victory over the Mitanni this way: "The great army of Mitanni, it is overthrown in the twinkling of an eye. It has perished completely, as though they had never existed." The Mitanni lived on to fight other battles, so... We talked about the Merneptah steel as well. It contains the first mention of Israel outside the Bible and was created somewhere around 1208 BC. The text on the steel describes the pharaoh Merneptah's victories over various armies, with one line reading, "Israel is laid waste, and his seed is not." Shalmaneser III was an Assyrian king from about 859 to 824 BC. In his steel, he describes a battle he fought against 12 kings at Karkar. One portion of the steel reads, "Karkar, his royal city, I destroyed, I devastated, I burned with fire." Skipping down a ways, after he describes how many thousands of soldiers the enemy had, we read, "From Karkar, as far as the city of Gezal, I routed them. 14,000 of their warriors I slew with the sword. Like a dad, I rained destruction upon them. I scattered their corpses far and wide, and filled the face of the desolate plain with their widespread armies. With my weapons I made their blood to flow down the valleys of the land. The plain was too small to let their bodies fall. The wide countryside was used up in burying them. With their bodies I spanned the Arantu as with a bridge. In that battle, I took from their chariots, their cavalry, their horses, broken to the yoke." One more quote. This one from the Mesha steel. The Mesha steel was created around 840 BC by the Moabite king Mesha. Mesha is looking to get out from under the thumb of Israel, and at this point, it would be one of the Amorite kings of the northern tribes of Israel in the divided kingdom. 2 Kings 3 identifies the Israelite king as Jehoram. According to 2 Kings 3, the battle does not go Mesha's way, and he's only able to turn Israel back after sacrificing his son to his god Chemosh. Nevertheless, the Mesha still reads, "But I saw my desire over him and his house, and Israel has utterly perished forever." It goes on, "And I fought against the town, and I took it. I killed all the inhabitants of the town as an offering of propitiation to Chemosh and Moab. Then Chemosh said to me, 'Go, seize Nebo from Israel.' So I went by night and fought against it from the break of dawn until noon. And I took it, and I killed everyone in it, 7,000 men and women, both natives and aliens, and female slaves, because I had dedicated it to Chemosh." Needless to say, Israel did not utterly perish in the 9th century BC. So other than trying to channel Dan Carlin in those quotes, what are we getting at? I guess my point here is that the writers employed hyperbole in their descriptions and perhaps a fair amount of propaganda. The point they were making is they prevailed in the face of overwhelming odds and often with the help of their gods. So it may not be necessary to believe that Joshua killed every last person in the cities he captured. The writer of Joshua used a technique familiar to him at the time and described the outcomes in black and white terms. It may be that Joshua didn't set out to kill all the inhabitants of Canaan. That may not have been his aim at all. Rather, he may have meant to drive them out of the land, to get them as far away from Israel as possible. I took the liberty of looking up a few words in the NASB as it relates to the Israelites' occupation of the Promised Land. First off is destroy. The English word destroy is used 6 times in Exodus through Joshua to describe what was to happen to the Canaanites. There are 3 Hebrew words the NASB translates into destroy. One is charam. Please just go with my pronunciation. We saw this word in the Walls Come Tumbling Down episode. Everything in Jericho was to be charam, that is, banned, devoted, or utterly destroyed. This applied to all the people as well. As translated by the NASB translators, the Israelites were commanded twice, both times in Deuteronomy, to destroy, charam, the Canaanites. An example is Deuteronomy 7:2, quote, "And when the Lord your God delivers them before you and you defeat them, then you shall utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them and show no favor to them." Another time in Joshua, they are told that the Lord hardened the hearts of the Canaanites so that they would be destroyed. In Exodus 23:23, we're told that the Lord would destroy the Canaanites, but it is a different Hebrew word there. In that case, it is chakad, to hide, conceal, cut off, cut down, make desolate. 2 more times in Deuteronomy, we're told that the Canaanites would be destroyed, and this time the word is shamad, to destroy, exterminate, be destroyed, be exterminated. Example, Deuteronomy 9:3. "Know therefore today that it is the Lord your God who is crossing over before you as a consuming fire. He will destroy them, and he will subdue them before you, so that you may drive them out and destroy them quickly, just as the Lord has spoken to you." So we see there was to be some destruction. It would be hard to say that the deaths of many Canaanites were not expected. There is another word that would seem to denote death, that is used to describe what the Israelites would do to the Canaanites, and that is consume, which is translated from the Hebrew word akah, to eat, devour, burn up, feed. Deuteronomy 7:16, the Lord is speaking here. "You shall consume all the peoples whom the Lord your God will deliver to you. Your eyes shall not pity them, nor shall you serve their gods, for that would be a snare to you." This is one of those times when we instinctively know we shouldn't take the verse literally. I'm pretty sure man flesh isn't kosher, but the point is well taken. Before we move on, it's interesting to note the strongest of those destroy verses, the ones that make use of charam and shamad, come from Deuteronomy. Now let's look at the word dispossess. It is used 9 times to describe what the Israelites would do to the Canaanites. There is only one Hebrew word translated as dispossess, and that is yarash, to seize, dispossess, take possession of. An example is Deuteronomy 11:23. "Then the Lord will drive out all these nations from before you, and you will dispossess nations greater and mightier than you." But that verse I just read, Deuteronomy 11:23, shows just a little how tricky translating these words into English can be. The same Hebrew word, yarash, translated as dispossess, is also translated as drive in that one verse. Let's look at it again. "Then the Lord will drive out all these nations from before you, and you will dispossess nations greater and mightier than you." And that's the next word I wanted to look at, drive. The NASB speaks of the Israelites driving out the Canaanites 21 times up through Joshua. Most of the time that word Yarash is used, 6 times the word Garash, to drive out, to expel, is used, and 1 other time, Shalak, to send away or to send, is used. What's interesting here is the Hebrew words for kill are not used in terms of what the Israelites will do to the Canaanites, not one time. There are plenty of times the Israelites are told to kill fellow Israelites for various infractions of the law. For instance, Deuteronomy 13:9, speaking of a family member or friend who tries to convince you to worship other gods, says, "But you shall surely kill him. Your hand shall be first against him to put him to death, and afterwards the hand of all the people." Wow, going through all that was pretty boring. But the point I wanted to make is, going into Canaan, the Israelites understood, or should have understood, that destroying the Canaanites was not their only option. Indeed, they were told to, quote, destroy the Canaanites, but they were also told to dispossess them and to drive them out. In fact, they were told to dispossess and drive out far more times than they were told to destroy, and not once were they explicitly commanded to kill them, even though the Lord did not shy away from death sentences within the camp of Israel. I'm not making the point that this proves how merciful and kind the Israelites were to the Canaanites, not at all. It would seem they were given to wholesale slaughter in their capture of Jericho, for instance. The text does not preclude, however, that people who escaped and fled from Canaanite cities lived. And it's not like being dispossessed or driven from your homeland is so great either, but it would seem the Lord's purpose was to keep the Canaanites as far away from the Israelites as possible. Those who didn't run would be conquered and put to death. There was no option for a peace treaty. What becomes clear as you read through Joshua and Judges is that the Israelites did not kill all the Canaanites. In fact, they didn't even drive them all away. Yet Joshua appears to have fulfilled his mission. The last verse of chapter 11, verse 23, the writer tells us, "So Joshua took the whole land, according to all that the Lord had spoken to Moses, and Joshua gave it for an inheritance to Israel, according to their divisions by their tribes. Thus the land had rest from war." But 13:1 says, "Now Joshua was old and advanced in years, when the Lord said to him, 'You are old and advanced in years, and very much of the land remains to be possessed.'" The Lord then details the land that needed taken. As we'll see in coming chapters, the tribes are allotted land, and a lot of that land would require the tribes to drive out the current occupants. We'll see how successful and how mostly unsuccessful they were at dispossessing Canaanites. So, just to put a finer point on all this, let's look ahead to Judges chapter 1. Spoiler alert. Judges 1:1 says, "Now it came about after the death of Joshua that the sons of Israel inquired of the Lord, saying, 'Who shall go up first for us against the Canaanites to fight against them?'" We already saw that even while Joshua was living, there was land yet to be conquered. The land remained unconquered after the death of Joshua. The Israelites, realizing the land won't conquer itself, asked the Lord who should fight the Canaanites first. It turns out to be Judah. Within Judah's territory, there were a couple of cities named Hebron and Debir. In Judges 1, 10 and 11, Judah fights against the residents of Hebron and Debir. But, if you remember, way back earlier in this very podcast episode, we read how Joshua, quote, "left no survivor in Hebron nor Debir." But now those cities are repopulated? So either the writer of Joshua is a liar, or the book of Joshua and the book of Judges tell two different versions of how the Israelites came to reside in Canaan, which many scholars believe, or Joshua left no survivor in those cities in a hyperbolic sort of way. I guess those choices aren't mutually exclusive, but you get the point, which is Joshua may not have, in fact, killed them all. I hinted at it briefly today and in other episodes, but there are many scholars who disregard the book of Joshua altogether and believe that it offers no help in understanding how Israel came to be. There are other theories that state the Israelites came into existence through any way other than an exodus and conquest, and I'll look at those, but not in this episode, perhaps when we get to Judges. Thanks for hanging with me. We'll take up Joshua chapter 12 next time. Until then, be strong and courageous. Have I not commanded you?